So this morning we're going to be looking at the question and hopefully coming up with at least some kind of an answer that do we know what we want? And no, this has nothing to do with Freud's famous question about what do women actually want, to which a woman of my acquaintance said, well, he should have asked instead of just trying to figure it out on his own, which was about as much Freud as you're going to get today, and that's probably more than we really need. And what this springs from is from our Old Testament lesson. And in our Old Testament lesson, we see the people of Israel are coming to Samuel and saying, okay, Samuel, you've done a good job for us. Your kids, on the other hand, we're not so crazy about. And the usual way things went then, as it did in lots of cultures, was that the children of the leader, whatever it was, would then take over. And they said, we're really concerned about this. And they had reason for this. They had precedent already. Eli's children, Eli was the priest who taught Samuel, his kids were no prize either. And so they were concerned about that. And their response was, we want a king. And Samuel was really angry at this. And he was angry about it for a lot of reasons. Some we know, some are obvious from the text, and some we sort of speculate on. And I think part of it was that Samuel was looking at them and saying, look, I did everything I could possibly do for you, and not only do you not want my kids, and maybe I don't want them either, but you don't even want what I did. And so what Samuel's been asked to do is not just replace himself, but replace himself with a different role altogether. So it's not terribly surprising that Samuel is angry about this. And so Samuel goes to God and says, okay, these crazy people want a king, which makes me mad. And God says, well, don't be mad at them about you, because they haven't rejected you. They've rejected me. And right from the very beginning of everything, when Israel was called out from the rest of the world in a special way, first an individual people and then into the larger group, the nation of Israel, the feeling had always been that God was their leader, that God was their king. And God had taken them from one place to another. He kept them safe. He got them to where they were now. And it's not terribly surprising then that God says, look, this isn't about you, Samuel. It really isn't. It's about me. And the people have said that they've had enough of the leadership that I provide, and that's just fine. They're going to see what it's like. And then Samuel goes back and says, well, if this is what you think you want, there's some things you need to keep in mind. And then he goes through the list of what's likely to happen. And depending on which commentary you read and that sort of thing, Samuel's basically swiping what the kings around them did. But when you look at it, that's fairly straightforward kingly behavior. Take what you want and leave the rest and hope that people are happy about it, or at least won't overtake you in some weird revolution kind of thing. And when we look at this whole thing, we then go and read the rest of Samuel, 1 Samuel and 2 Samuel. I just finished. I've been working my way slowly through the two Samuels, which is, it has some good stuff in it, but a lot of it is kind of depressing. And what it is it's, if you read through the rest of it, you see that everything that Samuel said was going to happen did. And it became worse and worse. I'm now about to embark on 1 and 2 Kings, which is just going to really drive home the fact that human beings don't do that well when you give them ultimate power. But Samuel says, this is going to happen. They say, well, we don't care. We want it anyway. And when you think about it, that's where the question comes from. Do we know what we want? Because did the people of Israel want to be oppressed by a king? Well, no, I don't think so. I don't think they had some kind of weird internal need to be oppressed. I don't think they had this feeling that they had too many possessions and they wanted the king to come and take them. I don't think they had this feeling that their kids were kind of rebellious, so the king should take them and put them in charge of other things and all of that. No, there's nothing of that. What they wanted was security. And what they wanted is they wanted to be like the people around them, which is perfectly normal, perfectly natural. Because we look at the people around us, and if we're looking for a reason to be dissatisfied with our current situation, when we look at the people around us, what we see is what we want to see. If you live in a house that's too small, the house that Heather and I live in is, well, by most standards, I think probably too small. But when you live in a house that's too small, when you look at other people in their houses, what you see is how lovely and big their house is. You don't see the maintenance, you don't see the taxes, you don't see the aggravation that comes with a larger house. You don't see any of those things because that's not what you're looking for. You're looking for a reason to look down on your own house. Okay, that's my own experience. I shouldn't speak for the rest of you, but that's the kind of thing we do. When you decide you need a new car because yours is old and it's not doing what you want it to, or it's starting to fall apart as all cars do, and you look at somebody else who has a new car, particularly if it's a kind you want, and all you see is how wonderful this new car is. Look, it starts all the time. The air conditioning always works. The windows always go up and down when you want them to, instead of when it wants to. And what you don't see are the car payments, or the concern that somebody who's got an old clunker doesn't care and parks beside you and hits your door with their door when they get out. You don't see any of those things because you don't want to. Because what we really want when we're looking at a lot of these things isn't what we say we want. The people of Israel didn't want a king. What they wanted was they wanted to feel like they fit in with the people around them. They wanted some hope for the future because they looked at the experience that they'd had under Samuel, which was certainly not perfect, but was pretty good. And then they looked at who was going to take over from Samuel. And they saw these kids of Samuel who took bribes, who perverted justice, as one text puts it. It was just a bad thing. And they said, we don't want that. And so instead of saying, this is what we don't want, we don't want this sort of thing. What we're looking for is security, for a sense that God hasn't forgotten us, and a bunch of other things that are hard to articulate. They just said, we want a king. And they got one. They got exactly what they asked for. But they didn't get what they wanted. And that's often the case with us. And we see it not just in the physical things of houses or cars or jobs or those other things that we can sometimes look at and say, well, if I have this thing, it will solve my problems. Because we don't say that. What we say is, I have problems, I want this other thing. And the underlying feeling is that this other thing will then solve our problems, when it probably won't. It'll solve some of our problems, but it'll almost certainly create some more. And that's just the way it is. And that doesn't mean that you're somehow crazy if you don't see these things. It's we're not built to see these things. We're built to see what we want. It's just we're not always equipped to be able to articulate it well. And when we think of the things that the nation of Israel was looking for, and when we think of some of the things that we're looking for, if all we want to do is be like the people around us, that probably won't really solve our issues. Because the people around us aren't us. Their experience isn't us. Their way of life isn't ours. And all of these things. And we think that if we just take that and bring it over to us, it will solve things, when maybe it won't. Because the underlying issue has to be addressed. When we look at our New Testament lessons as well, I'm thinking particularly of what Paul writes about. And it doesn't have this obvious connection in that Paul doesn't write here saying, oh, by the way, don't ask for a king because you won't like it. Follow God instead. Sort of an unwritten theme, I suppose, through a lot of it. But what Paul reminds us of, in a very real sense, is that if we're looking at the things of this earth as sort of the beginning and the end of everything, we're always going to be disappointed, because there's so much more to life than what we can see and touch and hear. It's not that these things don't matter, it's just that there's more than that. And Paul is somebody who really had, I think, was in a position to be able to say to God, I really want something else. I mean, when you think of Paul's life, before he had that encounter with Jesus, when he was going to Damascus, he was a rising star. It wouldn't be out of the question to say that Paul sort of had everything when he was still Saul. Because he did. He was the star pupil of the greatest teacher of his day. He was a faultless Pharisee, which is really saying something. And so when Paul had that encounter, all of these things from the outside that looked like they would make things successful, those were all taken away. And so by the time we get to 2 Corinthians, if anybody could say, look, I want a king, you know, to push the metaphor as far as it can go. It was Paul. And instead of that, what he says is things like, therefore we do not lose heart, though outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we're being renewed day by day. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. If Paul thought to ask for something, what he was asking for wasn't the immediate change of his circumstances. It was, I want to be the kind of person who is renewed from the inside, day by day, and who is achieving eternal glory that's more than whatever troubles I'm going through now. Because he says, we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. For what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. What the Israelites were looking at when they talked to Samuel, they were looking at what was seen, they were looking at the temporary, and they were saying, we want this fixed, and we want it fixed now. The problem with wanting things fixed now is that they tend not to be solutions that last. One of the things that, I work in a software development company, and I've done minimal programming over the years. I'm not a software person. I tell people how to make this stuff work. But one of the things that's sort of a hallmark of self-taught programmers is that when they have a problem, they read a book until they get a solution. And they do have a solution. The problem is the first solution is almost never the best one. And so you have solved a problem, but you haven't solved the problem. Because the issue is when you're trying to write a program and you run into a problem, the issue isn't necessarily the problem. The issue is you don't know enough to fix the problem. And so you fix it in the first way you can figure out, which often is more complicated and almost certainly is going to cause you more difficulty down the road. If we look at our problems from a single perspective and say, I want them to go away as soon as possible, you probably aren't going to get something that really lasts. People used to talk to me off and on back when I was still in a different denomination and teaching there, and they talk about the difficulty of not enough people on Sunday morning in their churches and things. And say, well, is that what you want, more people? I say, well, of course. I say, well, offer free beer. I mean, if all you want are people, you'll get them. But do you really just want people, or is there something more that you want? And of course, they'd look at me like I was crazy, telling me I was making fun of them, which of course I was, but not just to be mean, but to help them see that the issue isn't the number of people. The issue is, do you feel like you're successful? Do you feel like you're accomplishing what you need to do? Do you think that your church is the body of Christ that needs to be in this community? And if the answer to those questions is no, then let's look at that and let's figure it out. But let's not just say, let's get a bunch of people here. If your church is wealthy, you can hire people to come and sit in the pews if that's all you need. That's not what you need. And the people of Israel didn't need a king. The people of Israel needed to look not so much to the future that they were worried about, to the past, where God had cared for them and brought them out of Egypt and taken them through the wilderness and brought them to a land that was what they needed it to be. What do we want? The question is going to be different for everybody. Do we want good health? Do we want more friends? Do we want more money? Do we want a bigger house? Do we want any of those things? And it's quite possible that that is what you want. But it's always a good idea when we're asking ourselves those kinds of questions is to say, well, is this what I really want? Do I want a bigger house just because I want a bigger house? Or do I want a bigger house because I can have larger groups of people in? Well, actually, that's kind of part of it. And when we realized that, we said, you know, two blocks from our house, there's this enormous group, like plot of grass called Wascana Park that we can go to whenever we want. And we can have groups that are way bigger than any house could have. And so we've had barbecues there with 20 or 30 people. Our house is the same size, but we got to hang out with all these wonderful people. When we ask the question saying there's only one answer, we've limited things in a way that aren't terribly helpful. And we've limited God, not because God is suddenly constrained, but because God does what we ask more often than not, even if sometimes we should have asked for something else. So if we're asking questions about things that we want, and they're always, it's always a good idea to ask those kinds of questions. Anybody who's had children knows this. One of the most aggravating things in the world is when your kids won't tell you what they want. You know they want something. They say, well, no, don't say well. Just tell me what you want. I'm not saying I'm going to give it to you, but I can't give it to you if I don't know what it is. And we can't know if we've achieved something if we don't know what we're looking for either. And if we take the shortcut and just say, well, I want a king like the people next door, like the Israelites did, instead of saying, I'm really worried about the future. I'm concerned about what's going to happen next. That's a completely different question and brings a completely different set of answers. And it helps us look for answers in a different place. If we want a new car because we think it'll make us feel better about ourselves, we should probably try and figure out why we're not feeling good about ourselves and then see if a car is the best answer, because it probably isn't. I'm not saying you won't get a new car, but you might get it for a different reason. So the short answer to the question, do we know what we want, is usually not. The longer answer is that we can know what we want, but we need to get past our initial question or our initial request. And instead of saying we want a king, to say, God, we want the reassurance that you are with us. We want to know that you will continue to take care of us no matter what, even though Samuel's kids look awful. We need to know that even in the midst of poor leadership, that you will still be there with us, because they'd had poor leadership before and they'd gotten to where they were. Now, I don't know what questions you're asking. I barely know what questions I'm asking. But one of the things I'd encourage you to do is that when you ask these kind of questions, or when you make these kind of requests, ask yourself why. When you're asking God to heal you from whatever it is, and you should ask God for the things you want, but ask why. Look at the larger picture. I don't know what the answers will be that you'll get, but I do know that the answers that I've gotten when I've asked God for a bigger house have often been, well, what do you want to do with this bigger house? And until you get a bigger house, because God's never said you're never going to get one, but until that happens, can you not do some of those things in different ways? And it turns out we can. And while we wait for this bigger house, we have lots of people in our circle, just not in our physical house. Sometimes we're in our backyard. And when I don't have room for all the books I want, look at that, they're at the library. When I don't have all of these other things that I think there's only one answer to, it's amazing how often I can find them in other ways that are just as good and sometimes even better. But we get that by not just saying there's one answer to our issue, that there's only one acceptable response to our request. I often wonder what would have happened if the nation of Israel, when they came to Samuel, said, we want a king. Samuel went through the list of all the things that were going to happen, and they said, oh my goodness, we don't want one of those. What would the world look like? I don't know. Alternate histories are a bit of a mug's game to try and figure them out. But when I look back at my own life, and I see times when I wasn't so fixed on what I thought the only answer was, it's amazing to me how much something I'd never thought of turned out to be so much better. So if you're asking questions and you don't know what the answer is, or you're making requests and you don't know if you're going to get it, this passage of Scripture won't tell you one way or the other what will happen. But I think what it does tell us is that just because we can identify something that we want, it doesn't mean it's the best thing. And just because we don't get what we want, doesn't mean that we're not going to get the best thing after all. Amen.